WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Also offering a variety of tea and chai. Open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713.
2:40 Central Time. Time for a look at sports. Number 7 Michigan State looks to extend their home winning streak to 29 games tonight when they host Northwestern. The Wildcats have never won at the East Lansing venue. The team's already met this season as Michigan State won 77-66 at Northwestern on January 3rd for its 12th straight victory in the series. Illinois State visits Wichita State tonight in Kansas. ISU has won 3 of the last 4 meetings between those teams, including the last two. The Redbirds head into the game with a 1-2 mark in Missouri Valley Conference games. Jeff Kent is calling it quits. He plans to announce his retirement from baseball tomorrow at Dodger Stadium. He spent 17 years in the major leagues and leaves as the career home run leader among second basemen with 351, 74 more than Cub Ryan Sandberg. Kent hit 377 homers. Overall, the 40-year-old spent the last 4 seasons with the Los Angeles Dodgers, hitting .291 with 122 doubles, 75 homers, and 311 RBIs. He was also a 5-time All-Star and 2000 National League MVP. The Blackhawks host the St. Louis Blues tonight at the United Center. The last 5 meetings between the clubs have been decided by 1 goal, with Chicago holding a 3-0-2 advantage during that span. Chicago is coming off a 4-1 loss to visiting Minnesota on Monday. That's sports.
WILL programs are made possible with support from the Art Mart in Lincoln Square, Urbana. The Art Mart offers unique items for the home and kitchen and a deli and bakery featuring Reuben's chocolates. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio.
Next time on PRI's The World, America's new president has called for the prudent use of power, an examination of what that name means for Iraq, Afghanistan, and the Middle East. Barack Obama's foreign policy in the day's news. Next time on The World, coming up this afternoon at 3. In France, troubled car makers are banking on a bailout. The French government says it's willing to make massive investments to save its two big auto manufacturers, Renault and Peugeot. Eleanor Beardsley has more.
Sitting beside Carlos Ghosn, the CEO of Renault-Nissan, French Prime Minister François Fillon signed a deal for nearly $8 billion of state aid to keep the French car industry afloat in the current financial storm.
Notre effort en faveur des constructeurs va être massif.
Our efforts in favor of manufacturers will be massive, said Fillon. We're talking about sums in the order of 5 or 6 billion euros, but there is no question of helping car makers that decide to close plants on French soil. In sharp contrast to the U.S. approach, the French government is insisting that its car makers protect jobs. Both Renault and Peugeot Citroën have come under fire recently for setting up plants in Eastern Europe. The car industry employs 10% of the French workforce, and President Nicolas Sarkozy has vowed not to let the nation's key industries fall victim to the current crisis. But tumbling sales have forced the two automobile icons to let their factories run idle for weeks at a time and slash thousands of jobs. Job cuts in some areas have been met with massive protests by unions. Before digging deep into its pockets, the French government tried to help the nation's automakers get rid of unsold stock by offering consumers a 1,000 euro bonus for buying an energy-efficient new car. But it wasn't enough in the face of the growing crisis. Renault says it sees no problem with what the government is asking. But Peugeot, which is deemed to be in better shape, says it doesn't understand why it should have to issue a guarantee to protect jobs in exchange for financial aid. For NPR News, I'm Eleanor Beardsley in Paris.
Last night, the president and first lady went to all 10 official inaugural balls. Each had a theme: the youth ball, the ball for armed forces. NPR's Elizabeth Blair was at the Home States Ball, where the Obamas danced.
A little after 8 p.m., as President Obama took the stage, hundreds of digital cameras went up in the air. He told the guests from Illinois and Hawaii they were a special crowd.
So many of you got involved, not just in my campaign, but got involved in our lives many, many years ago. You're not new friends, you're old friends. And for that, we are grateful to you.
President Obama looked a little tired, but genuinely happy to see his home state's crowd. Michelle Obama was dressed in a radiant white chiffon gown designed by 26-year-old Jason Wu. The first couple danced only briefly. But Michelle Obama gave the crowd a kind of knowing smile. It looked like she was dancing at a party with close friends.
I think the first couple are ordinary people. They're regular, ordinary, nice folks, and they are part of the Chicago community.
Joy Cunningham from Chicago worked on the Obama campaign. She says it's easy for folks in the Midwest to identify with the first couple. The home state's ball was held in a huge room at the Washington Convention Center, spacious enough for the thousands of guests dressed in tuxedos and elegant gowns. Last night's celebration stirred up a lot of pride in people from Illinois and Hawaii.
To my good friends from Illinois, I would have to say this. He is not the president from Illinois. He's the first president ever from the state of Hawaii.
Walter Dodds from Honolulu is a retired chairman of First Hawaiian Bank. He did some fundraising for the Obama campaign.
If you know anything about Hawaii, the aloha spirit involves a unique perspective on the way we treat other human beings. In Hawaii, everybody is an ethnic minority, and we've learned a lot about how to deal with each other. And Obama, Senator Obama, now President Obama, I think he projects it.
For many people attending the home state's ball, campaign contributors, volunteers, the politically well-connected, last night was the culmination of a very long campaign. At the end of the night, when almost everyone had left, the velvet blue lighting of the evening was replaced by harsh bright lights so that workers could clean up. Reggie Foreman, a housekeeper at the Washington Convention Center, is sweeping up what the revelers left behind.
Cups and bottles and everything else, you know. That shows you right there. They had a good celebration. And that's what we all, that's what you want to see.
This was the end of a very long, very full, and very cold day in the nation's capital. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News, Washington.
And here's a follow-up story on Ella Mae Johnson. She is the 105-year-old African-American woman from Cleveland, Ohio, who was determined to see the swearing-in of President Obama earlier yesterday. She was determined even after people suggested the weather would be too cold and the wait outside too long. NPR's Joseph Shapiro tells us how she did.
Ella Mae Johnson is an elegant woman. She dresses with impeccable style. She keeps her flowing silver hair just so. But for the inauguration, she sacrificed all that, in good humor, to the greater task of staying warm. Johnson's nurse, Iris Williams, zipped her up in a bright blue sleeping bag. The puffy fabric covered Johnson from head to toe, with only her eyes and nose peeking out.
Once I get you sealed in, there's no turning back now. You can't move left or right, okay. Up or down. Okay. You're stuck.
At the Capitol, the nurse pushed Johnson in a wheelchair. In her sleeping bag, Johnson got plenty of attention. And when strangers found out how old she was, they stopped to congratulate her.
She just turned 105 a week ago.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Congratulations to Ella Mae. How are you doing in there?
Congratulations.
I'm fine. Now all I need is to rub my nose.
Okay, hold on.
Johnson's been a witness to more than a century of African-American history. And when this historical moment was over, she talked about what it meant to be in the middle of such a friendly crowd.
We were all there. We were there waiting. It didn't matter what my color was. It didn't matter what your color was. And I could not ask for anything better.
Ella Mae Johnson spent 7 hours outside in the frigid weather. But she says she was too wrapped up and too happy to feel the cold. Joseph Shapiro, NPR News.
Hunters have been using lead bullets for decades to kill game with little, if any, side effects. But new research finds that hunters may need to use more caution when choosing their bullets. Reporter Sadie Babbitts has this story on a hidden danger that's just coming to light.
Tony Hansen has been hunting wild game all of his life, and over the years he's grown pretty attached to what he considers the most cost-effective, most efficient bullet around, a lead bullet.
It matters a lot to a hunter because you are counting on the range of that bullet, you know what the bullet can do, you're out there to take an animal's life, and that's not something we take, you know, lightly.
The typical bullet used by most hunters is about 65% lead. These bullets are designed to handle high speeds and to kill an animal quickly without breaking apart and sending tiny lead fragments throughout the meat. Hansen works with the country's largest conservation group, Michigan United Conservation Clubs. He says he's not concerned about possible lead poisoning.
Generally speaking, if you make the kind of shot you're supposed to make, it's not actually hitting any of the meat that you eat. It's not something that really, you know, weighs into my thought too much.
Like Hansen, most hunters don't give lead bullets a second thought. Well, early last spring, food pantries across North Dakota and Minnesota were advised not to give out donated ground venison. Why? Because of lead. Lab tests revealed some tiny lead fragments in some of the meat. It generated enough interest that North Dakota launched a study involving some 700 people. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention worked with North Dakota's health department. They found that people who ate a lot of wild game tended to have higher lead levels in their blood than those who ate very little or no wild game. The results validated similar research involving California condors. The condors almost went extinct in large part because of lead poisoning. You see, the birds would feed on gut piles and carcasses left by hunters. And if those hunters used lead bullets, the condors would get sick. That old problem still exists. Lead poisoning remains the number one obstacle standing in the way of restoring the California condors. Rick Watson is the vice president of the Peregrine Fund in Boise, Idaho. He says they enlisted the help of hunters to shoot several deer using typical lead bullets. The animals were then x-rayed.
And we were astounded by the results. Typically, out of the 30 or so deer that we shot, all of them had fragmented lead bullets in them. What we were also amazed about, actually, was that the extent to which these lead fragments are sort of sprayed throughout the meat.
Watson says about 5% of a bullet does break apart, and some of it gets into the meat. He's now working on another study to see the impact of lead bullets on people. That's involved shooting more deer, sending the meat to random processors, and then running that meat through an x-ray machine. The findings, he says, support what North Dakota discovered late last fall.
And again, what we found there was that about 30% of the packages of meat that came back from these butchers had at least one fragment of lead in them.
It was enough to raise a red flag. Watson says the solution is simple. Hunters need to use non-toxic lead bullets. But most hunters aren't convinced. So-called green bullets, not made of lead, cost twice as much, and hunters don't believe they're as efficient as lead bullets. Hunters say they want independent research done before the hunting industry starts making the switch to non-toxic bullets. For the Environment Report, I'm Sadie Babbitts.
Shade trees can save you money on your energy bill. Now for the first time, researchers have figured out just how much. Rebecca Williams has that story.
Economists looked at utility bills of homes in California on the hottest days of the year. Jeffrey Donovan is with the Forest Service Research Station. He says if you have shade trees on the south or west sides of your home, those trees reduce your electricity use by 5%.
So putting a tree somewhere where it's going to cast shadows at the warmest time of the day. The other thing you want to think about is winter sunshine. Particularly on the south side of a house, you may want to put a deciduous tree as opposed to an evergreen tree. So in the wintertime, you're going to get some sunshine through that.
Donovan says how close you put those trees to your house matters too. For the most energy savings, shade trees should be within 40 to 60 feet of your home. For the Environment Report, I'm Rebecca Williams.
Support for the Environment Report comes from the Park Foundation, the George Gunn Foundation, and the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation. You can find more information and share your thoughts at environmentreport.org.
Associated Press is reporting that officials in New York City say divers have found the jet engine that broke off a U.S. Airways plane that crash-landed in the Hudson River. New York City and state police said the divers confirmed this afternoon that an object detected by sonar near the Intrepid Sea, Air, and Space Museum is the missing engine. The airline's other engine remained attached to the right wing of the plane. The Airbus A320 crash-landed in the Hudson on Thursday after hitting birds and losing thrust from both engines. All 155 people on board survived. The rest of the plane has been taken to a New Jersey marina to be studied by investigators. Link Solis forecast for Champaign-Urbana this afternoon. We'll expect mostly sunny skies the rest of the daylight hours, the high around 30 degrees. Mostly clear tonight, the low around 20. Mostly sunny on Thursday, the high around 40. Tomorrow night, mostly clear, the low 26. And partly sunny on Friday with a high of 34. It's 32 outside our studios on Friends Plaza.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Seaboat, featuring a southern style of cooking walleye and catfish, chicken, shrimp, sandwiches, and more, available for dine-in and carry-out. The Seaboat, 402 West Kirby, across from Jerry's IGA in Champaign. Catering services available at 355-9933.
Earth and sky.
We didn't realize that we already have increased CO2 into a dangerous zone.
You're listening to NASA climate scientist James Hansen. He's lead author of a new study that claims Earth's level of atmospheric CO2 is already dangerously high.
What's become clear from a number of different criteria is that the safe level of CO2 is no more than 350 parts per million and probably less, which requires significant changes in our energy use. We simply are not going to be able to burn all the fossil fuels.
CO2 levels today sit well over what Hansen believes is an acceptable level. They continue to rise mainly from our use of fossil fuels like coal and oil, and Hansen believes we could be causing major changes.
We can already see that the ice sheets are beginning to disintegrate.
Hansen and colleagues analyzed ice core data going back 65 million years to see how sea level responded to CO2 in the air.
The last time all the fossil fuels were in the atmosphere instead of in the ground, there was no ice on the planet. You know, sea level was 250 feet higher.
Hansen added that it's not too late for the world to act. He believes one step would be to phase out the use of coal by the year 2030. I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Tomorrow evening at 6 a.m. 580, we'll broadcast U of I Chancellor Richard Herman's town hall meeting live from Follinger Auditorium. Chancellor Herman, Provost Linda Katehi, and others will discuss the state of the university's current budget and plans for meeting budget challenges. That's tomorrow night at 6 here on AWILL AM 580, FM 90.9 HD2, and online at WILL.illinois.edu.